Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantara Shima Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jagatai Hoprinam ki. So tonight we'll begin chapter 2 of the 11th canto, and we'll go to verse number 21. What is chapter 2 called? Maharaj Nimi meets the nine yogendras. So this is where the philosophy begins, in the 11th canto. From here until the end of the canto, it's more or less a deep philosophical summary and treatise of the previous 10 cantos. So there's a lot of similar points philosophically which have been made since the beginning, but now it becomes very somewhat technical. It's a very deep part of the Bhagavad Gita, probably the most philosophical. Also the third canto, obviously Kapila's teachings are also like that. But it is a very deep summary. Except because the Uddhava Gita will start in a few chapters. The Uddhava Gita is very much spoken in the mood of rasa, because there is the connection that Uddhava went to Vrindavan, and because he went to Vrindavan, he has deeper realizations. So he alludes to many more things than are spoken to, about previously. Just like when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, he was speaking to Arjuna, but he doesn't speak about the gopis or things like that because he just keeps it very philosophical. But when he's speaking to Uddhava in these chapters, he directly mentions the gopis, and higher things are also spoken about. Because it's a very deep section. So tonight we'll begin. So this is not Uddhava Gita yet, but it's quite philosophical. It gets very philosophical. The previous chapter was more about pastime, about Krishna, planted the seed about Krishna leaving the material world. So. Okay. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, "Eager to engage in the worship of Lord Krishna, O best of the Kurus, Narada Muni stayed for some time in Dwaraka, which was always protected by the arms of Govinda."
In the second chapter of this canto, our Dharma, a pure devotional service to Krishna, is explained by Narada Muni to Vasudeva, who had acquired this devotion. Narada recites a conversation between King Muni and Chinmay Das. According to the Jiva Goswami, the word Abhignam indicates that although Narada Muni was frequently sent by Lord Krishna here and there for various pastimes, such as inquiring about the affairs of the world, Narada continuously returned to reside in Dwaraka. The word Krishna Sangha
Prashna.
Dasa indicates that Narada was very eager to be near Krishna and worship him. Because of the curse of Daksha, Narada is never allowed to live continuously in one place. Sridhara Swami, however, has pointed out Naratasyam Sapadha Prabha. In Dwaraka, there is no influence of curses or other such events, because Dwaraka is the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is always protected by his arms, as shown by the word Govinda Bhaja. The conditioned souls are struggling within the kingdom of Maya against the cruel laws of material nature, such as birth, death, old age, and disease. But if such conditioned souls have the good fortune to enter the city of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whether Dwaraka, Mathura, or Vrindavan, and if they are under the direct protection of the omnipotent arms of the Supreme Lord Krishna, they will experience the unlimited transcendental bliss, real life, which is eternal and which is meant to be lived in the personal country of God.
So what are the points?
One important thing is, he told us, Naraji always wanted to live near Dwarka because of his Kumbh passing.
Yeah, it's an important point which is made. It's a preliminary point to the section, but it says that if you're living in the holy Dham, you're freed from the effects of the material world. So that's why Narada wanted to stay there, because he was cursed by Durvasa. Durvasa cursed Narada that he could not stay anywhere longer than 3 days.
Daksha. Narada was cursed by Daksha.
I think it was Durvasa. No? Who's he cursed by?
Daksha.
Daksha? Is it? Sure, I read Durvasa today.
In the pastime where he converts 1,000 sons and then 10,000 sons of Daksha and makes them sannyasi after, so then Daksha becomes angry.
Maybe there's a second curse, because I'm sure today I read that Durvasa also cursed him. But Daksha, okay. Well, definitely, we'll say Daksha. But there may be another curse, which is, I'm sure, a read device, unless it was a misspelling. So Daksha is cursed him. So he can only stay a certain amount of time in any place. But then, because the holy Dham is not under the jurisdiction of any material laws, when you're in the holy Dham, you're directly under Krishna's protection. You know, superficially it may appear that the material energy is still working, and the material energy still has, you know, its effect, because you're, you know, in the material world, so you're still... But it's a different situation. The holy Dham is so auspicious. Just like the Melbourne Temple is considered to be an embassy of the holy Dham. So when you're in here, it's a different type of atmosphere which is taking place. And it has a different effect on the consciousness. And the material modes of nature do not act in the same way. So you can be elevated in consciousness very quickly. That's the powerful effect. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says one of the 5 most powerful ways to make advancement is to go to the holy Dham. You know, either a place like this or directly the original Dhams. Because when you go to those places, you can make rapid advancement in Krishna consciousness, because they're not affected in the same way. If your consciousness becomes more purified, then you can make advancement very quickly in those places. Now, if you're a material consciousness, then you won't take advantage. You know, some people come here, but they're not in the right consciousness, so they don't get the benefit. Same as you go to Vrindavan, but if you're not in the right consciousness, you don't get the benefit. But if you are in the right consciousness, then your consciousness becomes very quickly elevated. That is the potency. Any points?
Well, that should apply to all the 4 times, you know?
All of them, yeah.
The Dwarka and the
all of them.
And they're not there. And one more.
There's lots of holy dumps, lots of holy places.
All
all have the same potency. What means Vrindavan, Mayapur, Puri have the same potency. You know, the other dumps don't have as much potency as they do.
Listening to the quality of the
lecture,
what gives the
more benefit
than the holy
dham
itself?
Yeah, then the holy dham manifests at that place. Wherever Krishna Katara is spoken, then the holy Dham manifests.
Because in Vrindavan, if you go outside this temple, you are not in preaching or any classes going on.
Yeah, then you go out with the devotees. The devotees take your own paragraph and they speak about Krishna. That's the system. Okay. Now, dear King, in the material world, the conditioned souls are confronted by death at every step of life. Therefore, Who among the conditioned souls would not render service to the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda, who is worshipable even for the greatest of liberated souls? First, just the first paragraph.
The word Indriyavan is significant in this verse. Indriyavan means possessing senses. Although we are conditioned within the material world, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, we are awarded the human world, which possesses distinct senses, such as the eyes, ears, tongue, bone, and skin. Generally, the conditioned soul uses these senses in a false attempt to exploit the material nature for sense gratification. But our material senses and their objects are temporary, and it is not possible to become peaceful or happy in the attempt to gratify our temporary senses with the temporary sense objects offered by Maya, the illusion in which we are living. In fact, our strenuous endeavor to satisfy the material senses inevitably brings exactly the opposite result, namely material suffering. A man is attracted to a woman. Being sexually aroused, he marries her. Soon, there is a family that requires ever-increasing support. In this way, his innocent and simple life is ended, and he spends the major portion of his life working hard like an ass to support the demands of his family. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila describes very clearly that in spite of the exhausting work a man performs throughout his life, his family is ultimately dissatisfied. And when the exhausted father reaches old age, the irritated family members look upon him just as farmers look upon an old and useless ox. Sometimes the sons dream of receiving their father's money as an inheritance and secretly wish for him to die. Nowadays, people strongly resent the trouble of caring for elderly parents and therefore send them to an institution where they die lonely and neglected after a life of hard work for their so-called loved ones. One doctor in England seriously proposing euthanasia for elderly persons who are no longer productive.
Any points?
Sent to a retirement village in Australia. The old age people are sent to a retirement village.
Yeah.
A retirement home. They are not very capable. Retirement home. They are capable in a retirement village. People who are working, they don't have time to take the look after their parents.
Mm. Anything else?
So the thing is, our senses are there.
Yeah. That is the point.
Senses promise a lot of happiness, but they end up in the misery of people.
That is true.
So this one, who was it in this
book? Vridananda Maharaj. All the purports from now on, they're read out in the Maharaj.
It's almost like no one purports.
Yeah, very much in the mood.
Same mood.
Yeah, yeah, the mood is the same. Prabhupada instructed him to finish the Bhagavad Gita. He said, now finish it. So he was empowered by Prabhupada to finish it. So then, what's happening now is that we've finished the 10th canto. And the 10th canto is called Samambona. Or Ashraya. It is the goal. And then Viraja Prabhu in his commentary is calling this section, he calls his commentary in 11 and 12 canto, he calls it the backward glance. So now we're looking back. Everything that we've studied in the first 10 cantos, now we're looking back at the whole thing. So.
What is it, backward?
Backward glance.
Glance.
Yeah. Like when you build. So now, we're seeing from the very beginning, this is where the philosophy begins. What is the problem? Because we've all studied 10 cantos, more or less. So some of us studied the whole thing, but you know, people came. But the point is, we studied it. So you go through, Prabhupada says, by the end of canto 9, you should be a God realized soul. Prabhupada means that sincerely. Right? He says in the introduction, By the end of the ninth canon, you should be a God-realized soul. So who amongst us is a God-realized soul? Right? None of us have realized Krishna. Right? We have theoretical knowledge of Krishna, we have realization of Krishna, but we're not fully realized. We're not seeing Krishna face to face, or you know, we haven't developed prema. So we're not fully God-realized souls. So that is what is meant to have happened. But sadly, in one respect, we are not on that level. So now the 11th canto begins. This is really the very beginning of the philosophy of the 11th canto. And it says, what is the problem? So it analyzes for you. Okay, you should have been God-realized by now. You should have been Krishna conscious. You're not. Now what is the problem? So it's like now we have to become self-realized now by the end of the 12th canto. So you have 2 or 3 years. You know, and that won't happen either. We know it realistically. And then, you know, if Krishna allows us to study Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll finish that, we won't be Krishna conscious either. You know, we'll still be, you know, partially Krishna conscious. So what will it take? That means you have to realize this point which is being made here. The senses are false. Right? The senses bind us in this material world. How do the senses bind us in the material world? By attachment to sense objects. Right? That's why we're in the material world. We're still attached. We're still attracted. Right? We read all the philosophy. We study it deeply. But still we're attracted to the material energy. Until you sever that attachment to the material energy, you can't become fully Krishna conscious. Right? Just like last week, I turned 50. Right? So, you know, I've been waiting for that my whole life, right? You know, because you know it's going to happen one day. Some of you have already done it. Some of you are about to do it. Some of you will do it, you know, in the future. Some of you are quite, yeah. But I remember, you know, for years I've been thinking of this. Oh, 50, 50, 50. Because in our Shastra, it's a very important time. It specifically says, then you become a vanaprastha. It says you go to the forest. Right? So now I'm here. You know, I've been studying it for years. And I remember, you know, when I was 28, you know, when I was 50, I said, like, that's it, I've become a sannyasi. Right? Like, that was my meditation. But then when you get there, now it's a completely different ball game. You know, you think about it very differently now. And then it dawns upon you, that when you become 50, you're supposed to become serious in Krishna consciousness. But I was discussing with one of the devotees, one of my friends last week, my body's still very strong. So even though I'm 50, I don't feel like, you know, I don't feel like I'm getting old, or, I mean, I am, but, you know, not rapidly yet. It will happen, you know, in due course time, they'll become rapidly. So the attraction to the sense gratification, it doesn't disappear, right? Who was it that gave the example when he took his daughter to, Birbal Nakba. Yeah, so you all know the story. Then he said, bring the daughter. Right? And as soon as he entered, right, he looked straight at the young girl. And he said, even when you're an old person, you're still attached and attracted to the material energy. Right? It doesn't just disappear with age. Pankajangari Prabhu, you know, the famous Pujari in Mayapur, famous devotee, he told me that a number of years ago. He said, don't think it all disappears with age. It's not like you just get to, you know, 70 or something, suddenly, you know, sex desire disappears. It doesn't work like that. It's something you have to root out, right? At the very base of it. It's a great challenge because it continuously comes up, these desires come up. So you have to overcome these desires. Right? But the only way to overcome them is by becoming absorbed in Krishna consciousness. You have to become very deeply absorbed and root these things out, become more serious in your Krishna consciousness. And then Krishna will help you. Shrimpatam Swakata, Krishna Punyashavana, Udnashta Prayeshva Bhadreshva, that very, very important verses in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says in one of the purports that Krishna removes the material desires. When he sees that we are sincere, then Krishna removes them. But he has to see, are you sincere enough to have them removed? Because if you're not sincere enough, then he will. Just like, which form of Krishna do we go to remove the material desires? which of these incarnations do we go to? To remove material desires, who do we? Nisringadev. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you go to Nisringadev to pray to remove obstacles. Bahir Nisrimho, Hridaye Nisrimho, Bahir, the external obstacles, Hridaya, the internal obstacles. You pray to Nisringadev, please remove those things. But. Anyone, you can, anyone. But specifically, it says Lord Nisringadev, we approach in that mood. So when we approach Lord Nisringadev like that, I know many times I've done it, but there's always like a trepidation in the heart. You say, Lord Nisringadev, please take everything. But there's a little voice in the back that says, not everything. Please take it all. I want to fully surrender to you. Right? And the little voice says, don't fully surrender. So, you know, it's very difficult actually to give it fully. Well, sometimes I say to the, you know, I've said to Krishna over the years, I've prayed, you know, please take everything away, but do it slowly. Or I say, please take everything away, but do it softly. You know, I say these things. You know, I've had these voices in my head for many years. So we can say one thing to Krishna, but to actually fully surrender to Krishna, that's not an easy thing to do. So it is saying here that we have to look back, understand what is the cause of our bondage in the material world. It's attachment to the sense objects, which is just illusion, it's maya. But we're all attached. Right? Who's not attached to the sense objects? Right? All of us are, we're attached to the material world. Having given up the attachment to the material energy, until you give up the attachment to the material energy, you cannot transcend the material world. If you can conquer sex desire, you are 50% out of the material world. That's the thing. If you can conquer it, then you're 50%, you're out. The other 50% is you have to develop your attachment to Krishna. But you can't develop attachment to Krishna until you give up your attachment to sex desire. So that's what the beginning is teaching us. Give up attachment to sense objects. Any points?
Can we say that it is the spiritual energy is actually not touched us? It's only the material energy which is tangible. So therefore, we are not able to detach from the material world. If the spiritual energy has really touched me, then that would have done the cleansing process. But my chanting is not effective. So therefore, it has not touched me.
Not cleansed you sufficiently.
Because it's not a pure chanting.
Yeah, so you're not a pure devotee.
Anya Vilasa Swanyam doesn't say that I'm not a pure devotee. It says that I'm a pure devotee, but with obstacles, you can say.
Yeah, so you can take it that level, but if we make it a more simple definition, you're not a pure devotee in the classical sense. You're still practicing, it's still sadhana.
But that is still pure devotion, though.
So anyway, that's the point. But what's your point? What's your point?
The point is that the spiritual energy has not touched, so therefore the material hankerings are still continuing. If the spiritual energy
has touched, because why are you here? Because you've been touched by the material.
To the extent it has touched, that's fine. But actually, it has
so
not.
So we're saying the same thing. So what's your point?
Okay, in a different perspective.
Yeah, we're just saying the same thing. Yeah, it's just according to, like Krishna says, yayatam mam prabhajanti tam stato. So as much as you surrender, that much you are attracted. And when you become fully surrendered, then it takes time.
But the thing is, unless Krishna is willing to help you, or
Krishna is always willing to help.
The only way we can give up this material.
Yeah, it's by Krishna's mercy ultimately. But the point is, Krishna is willing every step of the way. That's the point. The point is how much we surrender, then Krishna reciprocates.
But isn't it if you pray to him, please help me?
He's helping us all
and
the time.
We try our best.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing we can do.
Yeah, but even trying our best may not be enough.
But he will encourage us.
I'm saying the same thing as everyone else. Same thing, same thing. Okay. Verse 3. One day the sage among the demigods Narada came to the house of Vasudeva. After worshipping Narada with suitable paraphernalia, seating him comfortably and respectfully bowing down to him, Vasudeva spoke as follows. Sri Vasudeva said, "My Lord, your visit like that of a father to his children is for the benefit of all living beings. You especially help the most wretched among them, as well as those who are advanced on the path toward the Supreme Lord, Uttama Shloka." Okay. So, Janesh, you want to read the first paragraph?
Vasudeva here describes the glories of Narada Muni. The words Kripanam Yatha Pitro Uttama Shloka Vartama Uttanam are significant. Kripanam refers to the most wretched person, whereas Uttama Shloka Vartamanam refers to the most fortunate, those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness. Srinidhara Swami has stated, Tatha Bhagavad Rupasya Bhagavato Bhavato Petra Sarva Dehinam Shastra Sivati. The word Bhagavad Rupasya means that Narada Muni is an expansion of the Supreme Lord, and his activities therefore bring immense benefit to all living beings. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is described as a manifestation of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There it is stated that Narada is especially empowered to give instruction to the art of devotional service to Krishna. Narada is especially able to advise the conditioned souls as to how they can dovetail their present activities with the devotional service of Krishna without unnecessarily disrupting their present life.
So, any points there?
The knowledge is very great and is empowered to make the devotees Supreme.
Anything else?
Narada Muni, the expansion of Supreme Lord.
Shakcha Veshavata. Shakcha Vesh.
Narada is the one of the special personalities of Srimad Bhagavatam, but he is there in every country. Most of the pastimes is somewhat present in the form of his presentation, like giving instructions or intervening in the Lord's Leela. In many cases.
Yeah, he is said to be a Shakchaveshavata, which means a jiva, who is empowered by Krishna with his shakti to perform extraordinary tasks. So Narada is he's given the shakti of preaching by Krishna himself. So as Janesh was saying, that throughout the Bhagavatam, he's the guru of many of the great personalities in the Bhagavatam, Dhruv Maharaj and Yudhishthira Maharaj and
Prahlad
Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj.
Vyasadeva
himself, being the first canto. Yeah. So he's the guru of the demigods, of the great sages, great personalities. So he's an extremely powerful person. Every guru in disciplic succession is representing Narada. Because Narada is if you look at the disciplic succession, Prabhupada mentions in the beginning of the Gita, so there is Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Vyas, and then it goes down like that. So he is one of the most prominent people in our disciplic succession. So it is mentioned that if one does not take to Krishna consciousness, then he is considered to be Kripana. Prabhupada gives this example in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in one of the purports. He explains the difference between a Brahmana and a Kripana. And he says Brahmana means liberal-minded, and Kripana means miserly. So if you take it like in a very broad definition, and Prabhupada is explaining, Brahmana means one who is absorbed in spirit. We're meant to be Brahmanas. And that's why we all come to these classes, because we're Brahminically inclined. We like to hear and chant about Krishna. That is the main activity of a Brahmana. They like to hear and chant about Krishna. They teach others and they learn about Krishna. Because like Prabhupada gave the instruction of Burujana Group, learn and teach others. Very simple instruction. Burujana Group has modeled his whole life on that instruction. Just learn and then teach others. And that is Brahminical life. If you don't do that, then you are Kripana. Kripana means you are miserly. And you just waste your time. You're just worried about your bank account. Which is, you see so many people in the world, that's all they're worried about. Right? Bhogaishwarya. Sense gratification and material opulence. So that is the definition of a Kripana. Someone who wastes the human form of life instead of using it to make spiritual advancement, just enjoys it for sense gratification. Rishabhdev says, if you do that, you're no better than a hog, a dog, a camel, or an ass. That's all you are. If you don't use your life for anything more than that, then you're just a polished animal. Vipada pashu. So, any points?
Krishna says in the recent exam we were studying that Krishna says that the water of bodies and the demigods, deities, they purify only after a long time, whereas few saintly persons' association purifies in a very short period of time.
Mm.
Narmuni is one of the people. Few moments, they remove all of sinful creations.
Very good. Anything else?
I was thinking what day happened in meeting. I was thinking what day happened in meeting.
Narada? Keep chanting. You had a point?
Yeah, I find that if even with an ISKCON, a devotee is able to touch someone's heart or any heart, then it means that the devotee is empowered.
That being said, time will tell. Time will tell. Because sometimes someone can be materially qualified. He can be a very good speaker, very learned. But time, he has to pass the test of time, whether it's based upon bhakti or whether it's more like material charisma. Because sometimes we'll see that also. Devotees have to learn to discern. Because sometimes someone comes and they speak very nicely, very learned, everyone's very. But we see in due course of time there are some discrepancies there. So we have to see, are they actually qualified like that? That will come in time. Anything else?
Now that you can give even a miserable rascal.
What is it?
Naraji can lift even a miserly rascal.
I can lift them up. Yeah. Someone who is fallen. Yeah. Rikari the hunter and different persons.
Is the second time that Arun is attaching Vasudeva? Last time was sages that as a sage he had addressed him. Vasudeva. At that time I think. Maharaj, when he met you, he had material desires, so he became
here he is talking to a personality who already with the single devotee, first person. So him also he will wide spectrum. So for every sadhana bhakti he has written the Narada Pancharatri Yama he has given. He also wrote the Narada Bhakti Sutras. But he also I'm not sure whether he wrote anything specifically on spontaneous devotional service. I'm not sure if the full Narada Bhakti Sutra. He had the opportunity to take bath in to go to Kusum Sarovar and then become Naradiya Bhakti. So he's there in every single bus. He has seen the entire spectrum. So he's able to talk from proper anyway.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Bhagavatam is spoken by him directly. So his instructions, as you say, they're extremely thorough, extremely good. Okay.
Wasn't
Naraji
who told when Narada
Maharaj
was not opening her eyes in the beginning? He's the one who went and told Nanda Maharaj to take Krishna.
Yeah, I mean, he comes, yeah, in many of the past lines of Vrindavan, he's there. There's another time when Lalita is on a swing with Krishna, and then he goes and tells Radharani,
yeah,
just to start some pastime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so he's all through the pastime. He
even changed the mantra, and then he wrote the Ramayana.
There's a saying in Hindi, don't be a Narad Muni. Don't be a troublemaker. Yeah, but in India sometimes they see him like that.
Especially in the things.
Yeah.
He went to Kansa also. Narad Muni went to Kansa also.
Yeah, just get the whole thing moving. Yeah. Yeah, he's very instrumental in the past. The activities of demigods lead both to both misery and happiness for living beings. But the activities of great saints like you, who have accepted the infallible Lord as their very soul, result only in the happiness of all living beings. So these are beautiful prayers spoken by Vasudeva to Narada. So he's glorifying Narada. And he says to Narada, basically his point is, you can solve the actual problems of life. Because why do we approach authority? To solve a problem. Like if you go to school, or you study a course, or you go to university or something like that, why do you go? Why do you do it? Because the authority will solve your problem. Most people, they want to make money, so you go and learn something so that you can go and make money. That is the system. But it doesn't solve the problems of life. For that you need a guru. So Narada is a sadhu who solves the problems of material existence. That's why it says in Bhagavatam, don't become a father, a mother, a demigod, a teacher, a guru, a brahmana, right? Worshipful demigod, all these things, unless you can deliver the dependence from birth and death. So that's what the guru's qualification is. He can deliver you from birth and death. So that's why we take shelter of these great saintly personalities. Any points?
What do you mean by that? Very soon.
What is it?
Said, who have accepted the infallible Lord as their very soul.
In the verse, who have accepted the fellow, is it? Yeah, just means their heart, their life, their soul. He becomes everything to you, more important to you than anything. Everything to Krishna. Those who worship the demigods receive reciprocation from the demigods in a way just corresponding to the offering. The demigods are attendants of karma, like a person's shadow, but sattvas are actually merciful
to the fallen. O Brahmana, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I will wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kind of fear. So devotional service destroys Maya. Maya means fear within the material world. What binds us to the material world? Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Na Sochiti Na Kankshiti. Right? What is Sochiti and Kankshiti?
Limitation.
Limitation and?
Yeah.
Hankering means you want something. Limitation means I could not get it. Or I had it, but now I've lost it. That's what keeps us in the material world. This is all fear, bhaya. Oh, I want it, but I can't have it. You become fearful or distressed or anxious. Oh, I must have this thing. And then when you get it, and then you lose it, then you lament. And that is also fear. Because now I cannot be happy. Even today, like on Facebook, you know, I preach on Facebook, especially Western people, aiming for bringing people. We made some devotees just from some of the preaching we're doing. So, you know, I'm preaching, and then I put one thing up today, and it was like about karma. And then one lady wrote to me, and she said, oh, I lost my husband, and two of my children are disabled. How can you tell me it is just my karma? But actually, that's the fact. You know, and it's not easy to take. It's easy to say it, oh, it's just your karma, but it's not easy to accept it. You know, for any of us, it's not easy to accept, but it is the fact. It might be difficult to accept, but at least we understand that's the truth. But they are so gross and so covered by ignorance, they can't even understand this is the truth. Right? It is all because of your negative actions in the past that you are suffering now. Right? If you're suffering, that's just because of what you did in the past. It's not anyone else causing it. People find this difficult to understand. So as long as you're in that consciousness, then you will suffer bhaya. Bhaya means fear. If you're hankering, you are in the mode of?
Passion.
And if you're lamenting, you're in the mode of? So we have to be in between. Right? If you're thinking about the future all the time, you're in the mode of passion. If you're thinking about the past all the time, you're in the mode of ignorance. To make advancement, Prabhupada says you have to be in the mode of goodness. That means right here, right now. You have to learn to control your mind. Just like this morning I was chanting my japa. I was at the farm. So, you know, 5 in the morning, I'm with, there's one other devotee. There's just two of us and we're chanting together. And my mind kept going away. You know, going to this, going to that. You know, thinking of this thing, thinking of that thing. And I'm thinking, what's my mind doing? How can I advance in Krishna consciousness if I can't focus it just on the holy name, to stay here and now? Right. So many things distract our consciousness. Right. We think, oh, this is important, that's important, that's important. But I kept reminding myself, these things are not important. Right. Just bring your mind back again to Krishna. And somehow mystically it goes off again. And you think, oh, just bring it back to Krishna. These things are not important. So you have to develop taste for chanting. If you have taste, then you will not be distracted from the holy. Any points?
Is that the karma of that lady or her husband's and children's karma that they died?
Well, both, because her karma is to suffer and their karma is to die or to be disabled.
So how the demigods prayed to demigods? If we are suffering because of karma, this holy Lord Krishna can change it. Or he use it to, you know, to make us.
So we have to surrender to Krishna.
But how the.
What is your question?
My question is, you know, people worship, they say that if you worship demigods, then
don't worship demigods. Bhagavad Gita says, akama sava kamo va, moksha kamare. Doesn't matter what your desires are, just worship Krishna.
No, what I am asking is, if you get the result very quick by worshipping them, then it is your karma which is helping you to get the result quick. It's not their fault.
All their blessings. It doesn't matter because we don't do it anyway. So.
But that's what I understand.
Well, it means the demigods are giving some blessing.
So they might have known our karma. And that's what
they know your karma, so you can only get... Just like, okay, you worship the demigod because you want to get a wife.
Yeah.
But your karma says your wife will be fat and ugly.
Yeah.
So you get the wife, that's the blessing of the demigod, but she's fat and ugly, that's your karma. Is it okay? Why do you keep asking me these questions? It doesn't matter. Who cares? To serve Krishna. What's the point? We don't worship demigods.
But some people ask.
Oh my God. It doesn't matter. Any other points? So speak to him, he will explain it to you. He knows all about the demigods. I know that I told you. Now you blame me for everything. Whatever problems you had then, it's my fault.
But in the previous verse, in 6:6, it says demigods are attendants of karma. What does that mean?
That means they give you your karma.
So they must be knowing what I've done in the past.
Yeah, of course they know everything you've done. Demigods give you your karma according to what you get. Like you worship demigod to be wealthy, but you only get like, okay, you say to the demigod, I want to get lots of money. But whether you get 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, that's up to the demigods because they know your karma. So you have the desire for money, but you'll only get according to your karma. That's the point. That's all I'm saying. We're not asking anything else. That's self-explanatory. Okay? Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. In the previous birth on this earth, I worship the Supreme Lord, Ananta, who alone can award liberation. But because I desire to have a child, I did not worship him for liberation. Thus, I was bewildered by the Lord's illusory energy. So Vasudeva is a eternal associate of Krishna. The whole purport, it's quite a long purport. A lot of these purports are very long. The purport is basically explaining that Vasudeva was an eternal associate. He did not ask Krishna to go back to the spiritual world. He asked Krishna, you become my son, you come from the spiritual world. Now the point which is being made there is that we do not pray like that. He's an eternal associate. We don't say to Krishna, come and become my son. Right? If you chant your japa every day for 1 year and pray for Krishna to come as your son, what will happen? Krishna's not going to come as your son. Right? So for all of us, we don't pray like that. Right? We just serve, right? And we pray that if you like, you can take me back to you. Don't you come here. But they're very, very exalted persons. So they actually pray and they do their sadhana to say, please come here, become my son. That's a very exalted level of consciousness. So we can't imitate things like that. That's just foolish to think that we could ask the Lord to come something like that.
From the,
yeah.
Why did Vasudeva desire that Krishna should become the son in the material world? Why can't he just be Krishna's father?
It's like some special desire that he has in relation to Krishna.
In the material world, he wanted his material.
Yeah.
Yeah, because all of the associates, it explains that the different personalities merge in. So Nanda and Yashoda, or not Nanda, but Devika and Vasudeva, also Prishni Sutaba, you know, they merge. Yeah, Kashyapa. Like they merge into the personalities. My dear Lord, you are always true to your vow. Please instruct me clearly, so that by your mercy I may easily free myself from material existence, which is full of many dangers and keeps us constantly bound in fear. So we'll read the last two paragraphs because they're interesting. So, Nilagop.
Those who actually deserve the highest perfection and are going back home, back to the people of this world, even of Krishna, should study more carefully the example of Shri Krishna, Sri Vasudeva in these two verses. He indicates that our world cannot achieve liberation by directly worshipping the Supreme Person and Godhead, or can very easily achieve the perfection of life simply by a women's association with the pure devotee of the Lord Krishna, such as Narayana. The example of Krishna saint among the demigods. In that view, the pure Yoga Swami, the world, Vishuddha Bhayat, indicates that Vasudeva very much feared the curse of the Brahmanas. Yes, one can become perfect by worshipping the Vaishnavas. By displeasing the Vaishnava, one can bring about all misfortune. Thus, Vasudeva feared the curse delivered by the Brahmanas.
Any points? So the guru should be respected like Krishna. This is our philosophy. Every morning at Mangalati, what do we sing? Shakshat Hari Twaina, Samasta Shastra, Tastata Vata. The guru is said to be Krishna's representative. Krishna Shakti, Vina. Right? Krishna gives his power. So the guru is Krishna's representative. So we worship the guru like that, that he represents Krishna. You don't think that he is Krishna, but he should be worshipped. He should be respected, right? Almost exactly the same as Krishna. That's how we treat the guru. No, just like Srila Jayapataka Swami. So a few days ago in Mayapur, it was his sannyas anniversary. Did you see the photographs? Anyone see any photographs? 49 years, was it? Might be 49, I think. 49, right? Yes. 49 years since he took sannyas. He is the oldest sannyasi in our sampradaya. The longest sannyasi in our sampradaya. Out of all the Gaudiya Mats, everyone. The Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, he is the oldest sannyasi on the planet. 49 years of sannyas. So if you see the photographs, they were celebrating in Mayapur. And they made a cake, like a celebration cake. The cake was incredible. You have the... Yeah, you can show the devotees afterwards. Like this cake's like, it's about this big. It's massive. Amazing. Right? And I was thinking in my mind, you know, this is the way devotees worship Krishna. Right? When it's Jamashtami, we put in so much effort, or Radhashtami was the other day. The devotees on Radhashtami in the kitchen, they cooked 111 offerings for Srimati Radharani. Right? So much is given. But then the guru represents Krishna. So he gets almost the same worship that Krishna gets. The cake's incredible that they make for Jayapataka Swami. Right. So this is the attitude. Because the guru represents Krishna, so we should worship the guru like that. That's Krishna's instruction that he gives. You worship the guru as he is me. He is my representative. So Vasudeva himself was fearful. What was he fearful of? Yeah, because he upset the brahmanas, the devotees. This is an eternal associate of Krishna.
Even the eternal associates are fearful of committing Vaishnava Aparadha. So we should also be very careful of committing. Because if you commit offenses to devotees, your spiritual life will become difficult. It will be hard to progress. You have to understand this point. Understand this point. If you offend devotees, it will be hard to progress in spiritual life. You have to be very careful not to offend. Right? If someone is more senior than you, you have to be very careful not to offend. If they're equal to you, you have to be very careful. Even if they're junior, you have to be very careful. Of course, according to the level of advancement, then you know the offense will have more magnitude. But still, right, even if you offend someone who is less advanced than you, it can cause big problems in your spiritual life. You have to be very careful. So he's showing us the right attitude. We have to be fearful, right, about offending devotees. Sometimes I hear... I'm not finished. Sometimes I hear, like I come to the temple, I live in the forest. Because I'm 15 now, so I live in the forest. So I live in the forest. And then I come to the temple, sometimes I hear the devotees are not getting along. They're arguing with each other. Why waste your time on petty arguments with the devotees? You should reconcile these things. You should put effort in to solving the problems. Yeah, solve the problems. Clear up the discrepancies. Do not let them go on and on and on. It's not pleasing to Guru or to Krishna. You think Radharani is pleased when the devotees are not talking to each other over some small thing? But devotees will hold on to it for years. 50 years not talking to each other. Because you stole my avocado at breakfast. Sometimes devotees, I argue, you know. Someone gets the last bit of Mahaprasad and then the other devotee gets offended and they don't talk for 6 months or something. Sometimes you hear, you know, devotees not getting along, you say, oh, what was the problem? And say, oh, they did this, and then, you know, we just start laughing. It sounds ridiculous. When it's happening to us, we take it very seriously. But when you hear from an outside, even one time I wasn't getting along, someone in the temple, like one of the more senior devotees, we weren't getting along because they said something I didn't like it, so then I was not talking to them. And then another senior devotee came, he said, what's the problem? He said, is that all? And then I thought about it, I said, okay, yeah, that's reasonable. You know, not such a big thing. So I went and said, oh, you know, I'm sorry, they said they're sorry. I have to keep things in perspective. You think, take things a little bit too seriously. But then that can disturb your spiritual advancement. It doesn't please Krishna or Guru. You have to be careful of these things. So, any points?
Yeah, I was asking, what is Pindarakati?
Pindaraka Tirtha? That's a holy place.
Any holy place?
No, it's a specific holy place. Must be just outside of Dwarka.
But why is it? Because they fear the curse.
Yeah.
Delivered there.
That's where the pastime took place. Oh my God, I cannot answer everything. I don't know all the details about everything. I'm not even sure where that place is.
Why I'm asking is Dwarka was made by Lord Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So Vasudeva wasn't there before that.
Mm-hmm.
So how did he know about this curse at this place?
Because they approached the boys after the curse. They came to Ugrasen and they said, this is what happened. So then they all heard what took place. So he's very fearful because there's a curse overhanging the dynasty. So.
But this place is near Dwarka. Dwarka was there when Ugrasena was in trouble.
Oh, Dwarka was there. Dwarka was there. when the curse took place, Dwarka, they were outside of Dwarka.
Which curse?
When the boys in the previous chapter.
That happened after that.
That happened while Dwarka was there. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, Devarshi Narada was pleased by the questions of the highly intelligent Vasudeva because they suggested the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They reminded Narada of Lord Krishna. Thus Narada replied to Vasudeva as follows. Sri Narada said, O best of the Satvatas, you have quite correctly asked about the eternal duty of the living entity toward the Supreme Lord. Such devotional service to the Lord is so potent that its performance can purify the entire universe. So this sets the tone. What will be the subject matter for the rest of basically this whole Uddhava Gita, this whole 11th canto? It is pure devotional service. That is the main subject matter. There will be other things discussed, but the main thing is pure devotional service. Because now Uddhava, Krishna himself, Narada, they're establishing to us what is pure devotion. Because we want to understand what is pure devotion. How can you become a pure devotee if you don't understand what pure devotion is? So that's what this will be explained for chapters on end. Something like 27 chapters explaining what is pure devotional service. So you will understand it very deep. Pure devotional service rendered to the Supreme Lord is spiritually so potent that simply by hearing about such transcendental service, by chanting its glories in response, by meditating on it, by respectfully and faithfully accepting it, or by praising the devotional service of others, even persons who hate the demigods and all other living beings can be immediately purified. So even if you have material desires, pure devotional service will purify you. It's an important point to understand, actually. I read a nice book about 5 years ago, written by one of Prabhupada's disciples. And he explains very nicely that it's not that we don't have material desires, right? And it made me understand it much more clearly. We have to accept our material desires because they don't go away quickly. Many times since I've been a devotee, I've woken up in the morning and said, right, that's it, no more material desires. Half an hour later, they're all there. Right? We all say it, but it doesn't change anything, right? So your material desires are something that you live with. But even though you have the material desires, like right now I have material desires, but it's not stopping my devotional service. Just because they're there doesn't stop bhakti. It's a very important point to understand. The material desires will drop off gradually over time, right? But they do not impede devotional service. You still can make advancement rapidly, even with your material desires. And gradually over time, they will be burnt up. As you become more mature as a devotee, you learn to reconcile the two. It disturbs our minds a lot in the beginning, because we think, oh, I'm so fallen. You hear devotees say this sometimes? Oh, I'm so fallen. Like every time you go to a Vyasa Puja, everyone reads their offerings. Oh, I'm so fallen. It becomes very, it's like the same thing again and again. Right. 100 devotees read the same thing. I'm so fallen. We're all fallen. Yeah, but at some point in time, you just accept that, okay, I'm fallen. So what? Just keep serving Krishna. Yeah. In due course of time, all of those material disqualifications, they will be burnt up. But you have to perform pure devotional service. Today you have made me remember my Lord, so supremely blissful. The supremely blissful personality of Godhead, Narayana. The Supreme Lord is so auspicious that whoever hears and chants about him becomes completely pious. To explain the devotional service of the Lord, sages have related the ancient history of the conversation between the great soul, King Videha, and the sons of Rishabha. Swayambhuv Manu had a son named Maharaj Priyavrata, and among Priyavrata's sons was Agnidra. From Agnidra was born Napi, whose son was known as Rishabdev. Sri Rishabdev is accepted as an expansion of the Supreme Lord, Vasudev. He incarnated in this world to propagate those religious principles that lead living entities to ultimate liberation. He had 100 sons, all perfect in Vedic knowledge. Of the 100 sons of Lord Rishabdev, the eldest, Bharata, was completely devoted to Lord Narayana. It is because of Bharata's fame that this planet is now celebrated as the great Bharat Varsh. King Bharata rejected this material world, considering all types of material pleasure temporary and useless. Leaving his beautiful young wife and family, he worshipped Lord Hari by severe austerities and attained the abode of the Lord after 3 lifetimes. 9 of the remaining sons of Rishabdev became the rulers of the 9 islands of Bharat Varsh, and they exercised complete sovereignty over this planet. 81 sons became twice-born brahmanas and helped initiate the Vedic path of fruitive sacrifices, Karmakanda. The 9 remaining sons of Rishabdev were greatly fortunate sages who worked vigorously to spread knowledge of the absolute truth. They wandered about naked and were very well versed in spiritual science. Their names were Kavi, Havir, Antariksha, Prabuddha, Pipalayana, Avyahotra, Drumila, Chamasa, and Karabhajana. There's a nice purport just there. We're going to finish there. But there's a very nice purport which analyzes the questions which will be asked in the next few chapters, and where the answers will be found. So for your own reference, if you study that, it'll make it clear. Okay. Tomorrow night we'll finish the chapter. Maybe not finish the chapter, but continue the chapter. Srila Prabhupada ki? Jai.